You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer. Welcome to the Australian Finance Podcast.
I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And we're here to give you the tools and knowledge to invest both your time and money better.
If you're new, feel free to jump in with our Starter Pack series that aired in early 2022, or our Shares or ETF mini series.
We've got plenty to share with you in today's episode, but if you want to catch us on socials,
head to Rask Australia on Insta and Twitter.
I'm also found at Kate Campbell AUS on Insta.
And I'm Owen Rask AU on Insta.
Just beware of the fake accounts. We'll never DM you about trading strategies or crypto. And if it sounds a bit weird, it's probably not us.
And just one final heads up before we get into the show. This podcast contains general financial information only. Alex, how you going, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Very good. Very good. I'm glad that we can do this Q&A and ask an advisor. Get some proper professional advice. It's been a while since we've done one of these, but for those of you that don't know, Alex and his wonderful team at Everest, financial advisors based all over the country. We've been working with them for some time and so glad that we've decided to do that because the team is great. You can get in contact. We've done an episode previously that explains the Everest business and also just generally how the business is different to other financial advice businesses. And you can learn more by following the link that is available below this video or in the podcast player you're listening on. To kick things off, mate, we're going to answer some questions. I would like to give you two kind of like hypothetical questions because you could do both in both situations. Yep. Mm-hmm. Would you rather a weekend in Margaret River or a weekend in Adelaide Hills?
Yeah, so for the listeners, so they know I'm based over in Western Australia, so I know Margaret River relatively well, and it's a beautiful part of the world. Lots to do down there in terms of wineries, and there's a chocolate mm-hmm. factory and beautiful coastline and stuff like that. However, I've never been to the Adelaide Hills, and I do hear that that's a pretty special place as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pick that based on the fact that I haven't been there before.
I like it, mate. I like it. Good choice. Everyone in Adelaide's just giving us a little fist pump right now. Both are beautiful, and the Adelaide Hills is very nice, and it's pretty close to the city, so it's easy to get to when you get there. Second one, this is more topical. I was stuck on a plane with some Swifties recently coming back from Sydney, which happened to triple the price of the fare home from Sydney to Melbourne. Taylor Swift or Ed Sheeran?
Yeah, both... Both good choices, in my opinion. I don't mind a bit of pop, but yeah, I think maybe we go with the queen on this one, Taylor Swift. You know, I think she's on track to do the highest grossing world tour ever. I think over $1 billion. Let's back her in. It's all about her right now. So yeah, I'll go Taylor Swift.
Respect. I think both of these artists did their biggest ever shows in Melbourne, at least at the time when they did them. So I'm quite proud of that fact at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, MCG. Good choice, mate. Good choice. And it keeps everyone happy, I think. All the Swifties are kind of like riding that wave right now. So good for you. No complaints coming your way. So just before we get to the questions today, you can write in by hitting the link in your podcast player that says ask a question. This episode that we do where we ask financial advisors like Alex, basically, any questions that you might have, they go across all the different RASC podcasts typically. And so you can select any of the channels. But if you do want to speak with Alex in particular, if you want to get kind of like a proper expert opinion on a general question that you may have about finance, select the Australian Finance Podcast and your question will come through to us. Of course, if you have more specific questions, go and reach out to them, because we cannot give personalized advice in this, which is why we ask for things like a funny name on the way in. You'll get a few of those in here. And try and keep it general in nature, because we cannot answer personalized questions. You need to seek the advice of a licensed and trusted financial professional before you do that. First question is about budgeting woes, and it comes from Birdie. So Birdie, great question here, because this is relevant to everyone. Very open-ended, this question, which is what we like here on the show. Why can I never stick to a budget? Alex, I know you and the team do a lot of like cash flow analysis. You review people's bank accounts, their spending, all that sort of stuff. You've been doing this for years. Birdie's saying, can never stick to a budget. Do you have any general tips?
Yeah, so I think it's a pretty common problem to have. I think a lot of people struggle to stick to a budget or sort of save consistently, because at the end of the day, you know, we're not robots, we're humans. You know, we have emotions and things like that, which doesn't always pair up perfectly with finance. Mm-hmm. Some of the things, I guess, to think about, as you know, perhaps why it can be difficult to stick to a budget is firstly, it may not be realistic. I've sort of seen over the years, psychologically, people try to give themselves a budget, which is just simply too strict. So you've got to be realistic in setting your numbers. And what I'm talking about there, what we often see is when people create a budget, generally they do it for like their fixed expenses. So maybe like their phone bill, their gym, their council rates, if they've got a house as an example. But they don't tend to budget always for like more of those discretionary items. So we're talking about Taylor Swift just before. Obviously, those tickets were pretty expensive, I think, to go see her. So it may be a case of they haven't sort of say set themselves a weekly limit or a fortnightly limit or a monthly limit for a set amount of money to be put aside for those sort of discretionary items. So it might be, you know, I don't know, $250 a week, or again, yeah, whatever they sort of want to do. And if they want to buy the say the Taylor Swift tickets, which I think were $700 kind of at a minimum or something.
Were they really?
Wow. That's what I told. Don't quote me on that, but I think they were pretty expensive. So, you know, in that example, you'd have to sort of save up a couple of weeks before you'd be able to purchase that, right? But that's like an easy way of just sort of setting that spending parameter for more of those discretionary things. Other ways that you can, I guess, work on really trying to say sticking to this budget, so using different banks as an example. So you might have one bank for more of your everyday spending and bills, but then, you know, you're sending a set amount to a different bank for your savings. So you might be like, I want to save $250 a week, so I'm going to send that out to a different bank, which then puts a bit of a physical barrier, right, to then get your hands back on that money, as an example, and makes you...
That's a great behavioral nudge, right? This is kind of like a blocker, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because then if you want to move it back, then you're going to have to stop and think about, all right, you know, should I be doing this? Is it really going to be in my best interest? And I guess, two other things as well is trying to link it back to a goal. So like, what are you creating the budget for? Like, what's basically the reason for it? Are you saving for a house? Are you, you know, trying to, I don't know, put money away for an investment so you don't have to, you know, work your entire life? Are you saving up for a car, a holiday? So linking it back to a goal will sort of help with that accountability piece in terms of sticking to it, because you know now, hey, if I go and, you know, spend more than what the budget says, it means that it's, you know, it's an extra month before I can go on that holiday, or it's an extra month or two before I can now get that car, as an example too. And the final thing I'll just sort of close out on as well is like, if you've tried sort of all these things and it really is just not working for you, don't you know, sort of feel ashamed, or go get some professional help at the end of the day, because it may be worth then spending a bit of money with a professional to help them effectively, or for them to help you, you know, set up a budget which is going to work going forward. And, you know, a financial advisor can obviously do that, but there are obviously people that call themselves money coaches out there as well, which will sort of specialize on this sort of stuff too.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because I was actually going to say, so just to recap your points there, you got to go, like, is the budget realistic? And there's no shame in that, right? Is it realistic for your situation? I myself, Alex, used to do this, as I'm sure many of your clients have in the past. It's like you have, if you're really engaged with this sort of stuff, you get like a 10-line spreadsheet and you're like, I'm going to spend this much on Netflix and then this much on Amazon. And then you go into the minutiae and it only takes like one of those things to increase their price or to circumstances to change only a little bit, and like it's like the bolts start to rattle and the whole wheel falls apart before you've even figured out what's going wrong. So being realistic, and that kind of does tie in really well with your last one, is that if you have found in the past that you've been setting those types of budgets in place, don't feel ashamed if you don't achieve it. Like, be kind to yourself. Like, I feel like that's a really good piece of advice. Your other one was fixed versus variable expenses, making sure that, you know, what is a discretionary expense, like say Tay-Tay versus say like the mortgage, you probably have a better indication of one or the other. Different banks, just to create that mental barrier. Evan and Kate did some fantastic episodes on like, you know, brain hacks last year. And then the goals-based thing. I think the goals-based thing is the thing that most people struggle with, but I think it's becoming more into the discussion. And I know you've been doing this for years as an advisor. Your role is to manage behavior as much as it is to look good on a spreadsheet, right? And if not more. And so understanding what it is that someone actually wants, because once they know that, what is it that you really want? The budgeting stuff kind of falls into place because you're like, okay, we know what you want. It's no longer going to feel like a pain to do a budget because you're moving towards that thing, whether it's a house purchase, whether it's a wedding.
Yeah, that's right. Because like you said, now you're actually, you know, you're on track to, like you said, where you want to be or what you want to be doing. And I guess the kind of like the acid test as well, in my opinion, for a budget is if you do set one for yourself at that 3 month mark, that's kind of the point where I think you can be honest with yourself and be like, you know, is this working? Or, you know, have I potentially tried to cut my discretionary just way too much in that I feel like I can't do anything and it's really impacting my lifestyle? Or it's the alternative. If you get 3 months in and you're like, yeah, I really feel like I've always got money for my bills. I've always got money to go out with my friends and buy that Tay-Tay ticket if I want it. So that's a good sign that it is sort of working too. But as you mentioned, and yeah, and I started with like, it don't be too hard on yourself. Like it has to be realistic. Otherwise, you're just not going to stick to it.
Yeah. And you're going to feel terrible about finance, budgeting and all that sort of stuff. Remember, I love that acid test, by the way, a 3 month kind of yardstick. Give yourself a chance and reflect. Realistically, like the maths doesn't lie, folks. Like you got to either earn more or spend less to get that saving goal. Like it's like, or both, if you really want to supercharge it. And we've done some fantastic episodes around like career progression and stuff like that as well. So go and check those out. Great question, Bertie. The next one comes from Teen Investor. Kate said this one's called, she's titled it as Teen Investor. It's from Big Happy Hippo 123, which is quite a, if you got ChatGPT to give you an anonymous name, that's probably what it would come up with. Hi, I am a 15-year-old teenager going into high school. I would love to start my investing journey with micro investing. Great that you're starting early. Let's just get that in there. Goes on to say, what platform do you think would best suit my needs? I would like for it to be a custodial model, obviously, they say in brackets. And I would also like to automate my investments, e.g. not a cost every time I add money. Thank you for any ideas. Now, we can't tell you which platform to go with specifically in this situation, Teen Investor. We'd love to help you out and make you an even happier hippo. But the reality is that we can only speak generally. And so if we do mention names of things, it's important that you reflect on that and you read, obviously, all the T's and C's. Now, there were a few things that I thought were interesting about this, Alex. The first one is that they obviously, as their words, wanted a custodial model and they wanted to automate their investments. The third thing is they're pretty young to be starting, which is a great thing. Over to you.
Yeah. Definitely. Starting at 15 is it's awesome. So yeah, well done to the big happy hippo 123 on that. I think that stuck out for me as well. So, you know, stating that I'd like for it to be a custodial model and then in brackets, obviously. I'm just going to assume that they've said that because of the cost factor in that a custodial model is typically going to be cheaper than the alternative. It's important to remember as well within this that the parent's name would have to be on the account as well. So I do sort of wonder potentially if they're maybe getting their wires crossed a little bit with stating the custodial model versus, obviously the parent is the trustee and the minor is the beneficiary in this case. Mm. Now, like you said, we can't obviously make any recommendations of what platform exactly to use. There are a lot of great options out there. So I'm just going to list, four sort of options, which again, in no particular order or anything like that. So Pearl has got a micro investing capability these days. You know, you've got Raise, which a lot of people would have heard of before. Sharesies does something similar. And then this is not a micro investing option, but Superhero is a custodial model as an example. So custodial models for those listing generally have lower fees and generally have lower minimum amounts that you can invest. So Superhero in this example, $100 is the minimum there. However, the micro investing apps generally, you know, you can do, you know, 50 cents or I don't, can you do 1 cent? You probably can.
I think you may be able to with Sharesies. I don't know, but I think so.
And these are all great things to consider, which I think is less important in this case, but just things to consider in the future is obviously, the fees that they charge within these certain platforms, you know, that needs to come into some consideration at some point in time. I think more though, you know, starting at 15 is great. And it's just about setting the behavior, getting that money compounding over the long term and, you know, to really sort of set themselves up. And the micro investing platforms are a great way to do that because you can invest, you know, literally like a dollar just to start to get a feel for your own risk profile as well. Like, how do you feel as the market goes up and down? You know, how do you sort of react to that too?
I love that. And so I'll just repeat that list of Sharesies, Superhero, Perla, Raise, and ComSec is probably the next one I'd throw in there.
Yeah, ComSec Pocket.
ComSec Pocket, which is like the light version. For full disclosure for everyone, we are sponsored by Perla and have been for many, many years, just as a disclosure. But all of those kind of facilitate that. The one that I might single out here, and I want to touch on what you said about the parents. It will have to be in the parents' name because in Australia, legally, a child cannot own shares in their own legal name. They can benefit from them. But interestingly, Hippo, I'm just going to call you Hippo just as a shortened version. You might be able to create that account or have it as your parents' account and then convince them to book all of their travel and their accommodation and buy things through Raise that then is reinvested back into your portfolio, even though they spend the money. So you might say to your parents, you know, those Christmas presents you're going to buy through booking.com or the, you know, how we're going to go on that family trip. Can I book it through the Raise account and use booking.com? Knowing that when the travel is undertaken, that 2, 3, 4, 5% of the rewards is then invested into your account, just as a little hack to get your parents to contribute to your long-term investing. But that's a great question, and thank you for sending it through. Okay, so this one doesn't come through with a name, but it's about a mum in her 50s with less than 10K in super. So this is from, a listener who wants the best for their family. So they go on to say, my mum works for herself and currently only has $8,000 in super. She has 70K in savings left over from when she withdrew super in COVID. Would it be wise for her to put a massive chunk of these savings back into super via, say, a recontributing strategy? Mum's hesitation is she wants to save for a house deposit. On the other hand, getting a home loan as a single woman over 50 may be too difficult anyway. Financially speaking, would investing in super rather than buying a house be a more sensible option? I'm just going to pause for a moment and just say that these are some pretty big life decisions, and it is important to get advice at this stage of life, even if the balance is small, because there's a few tangly things around here like superannuation rules, but also there may be strategies with Centrelink that could be forecast by a financial advisor, or maybe just, you know, maybe there are other levers that they can pull. So we've got a big chunk of savings, Alex. We've got a small super balance. We've got a single mum who's heading towards retirement and wants to make herself secure, both in the way she lives and hopefully in super. A lot of people are in this situation. They go through having kids, particularly as a single parent. They don't have the balance that they want. So we're just looking for some general kind of ideas around this.
Yeah, I think I'll just start off by being that we're going to approach this genuinely. We obviously don't know this person's situation. There's quite a few variables here which we would need to know if we were to obviously advise personally. So first thing I think to think about is, it's great that they're obviously, considering, what do we do basically with this lump sum of savings? So when you're considering, say, in this situation of potentially putting more money back into super, your own income that you're earning is quite important to consider, because a super fund will pay tax at 15%, okay? Whereas if you're, you know, you're earning above, let's just call it 20 grand for ease of numbers, you're paying 19 cents in the dollar, and then you go on to pay 34.5. So most people are in the 34.5% bracket within Australia, which is higher than obviously the super fund tax rate of 15. So if this person is working full time, let's just assume, it may be then beneficial to potentially contribute some of this money into super to reduce their tax first and foremost. Okay, yep. So from a tax perspective, that's sort of important. However, I think before you would even consider that, again, it comes back to the goal. So it sounds like it is important that they want to own a house, okay? That we'll just assume that that is obviously what they want to do. Now, obviously, the practicality of that may be difficult. Obviously, single parent, so what they earn is going to be a large factor, again, on how sort of achievable that is. I would be speaking, you know, potentially to a mortgage broker to understand what your borrowing capacity is. So at least you know that first and foremost, before you're sort of making any decisions around, okay, you know, this chunk of savings and my income is never going to get me sort of the house or the unit that I potentially want in the area where I want to live. So then maybe this is then an alternative to put it into a better tax structure, which, again, if this person's in their 50s, the time frame that they can potentially withdraw that money back out or access that money is a lot shorter than someone, say, in their 20s or 30s as well. The other thing I had noted down, again, coming back to that goal of home ownership, is remember, like it's like you said, it's planning out or thinking out, okay, when I do go into retirement, how would I feel renting versus owning my own house? The Australian retirement system, right, is still traditionally largely based around home ownership. So not having a house at this point in time can often be a little bit of a disadvantage. I do think obviously over time that will change, because less and less people are going to be owning in the future due to, you know, affordability and things like that. But someone in their 50s right now, I don't think that system's going to change anytime soon, as an example. Yep. So it is thinking about that, I think is important too. And then the other thing to consider is, yeah, as I've kind of already touched on, but if they were to, say, contribute this money back into super, it can obviously be pulled out at a later point in time, you know, in their 60s, which can then obviously be used, again, you know, to potentially purchase something in terms of a house or a unit at that point in time as well. So there's quite a few things to sort of consider here. A lot of it is around really what they're earning.
Agreed. Because so as we think about the life cycle of most Aussies, even if you're, and this life cycle I'm about to describe applies to couples and singles equally, but it's more pronounced for singles. Typically, like in your 20s and 30s, you find a partner, you marry or whatever your situation may be, but then you look at buying a house and that's a big expense. Then you get in the house, you've got a big mortgage and you typically have kids, you go down to that one income typically, or one and a bit. Which is pretty tight. And then the kids kind of get into high school, you can start to resume, start to earn a little bit more, you maybe start to go on those holidays. Then they're old enough to start thinking about moving out and you may want to support them financially. But then when they get to a stage, like probably in their mid-20s, they're kind of independent, they're earning their own income. And you, as the person who's got the empty nest, you're thinking, well, now it's actually kind of like the reawakening, because all of a sudden you've got a bit more time. You can re-engage in the workforce. Potentially, you can actually earn more and you can really supercharge that super balance. But a lot of the times when people are single, and this is totally fair enough, after you've been through kids and you've done all that, it's not always easy just to jump straight back on the bandwagon. Like, you can't just jump straight back into a great job that you love. And emotionally, there's sometimes a bit of a hang up there in terms of people re-engaging. You know, I don't understand all this technology stuff that the kids are talking about. Like, there's always these kind of limiting beliefs. But I think that, to your point, and I agree with you completely, that the missing piece, obviously we don't have any information on this person. We couldn't know who they are if they walked past us in the street or slapped us in the face, is, does mum want to work? And if mum wants to work, she can really go for it now by the sounds of it, and she can make bank and then decide, okay, maybe, and to be honest, if it was my mum, I'd be saying, mum, if you're working, let's see if you can earn more, and then let's go and pay a financial advisor and understand the options. Like you said, mortgage broker is basically free. They'll tell you probably over a phone call what your loose capacity might be. let's weigh up our options. But regardless, earning money is not going to be a bad thing at this stage. You know, it gives you the flexibility.
Absolutely. And like you said, it's, you know, when you are in your 50s, again, it obviously depends on everyone's situation, but for the majority of people, yeah, kids have kind of left or are largely, you know, independent now. So it is a real kind of golden opportunity to sort of, yeah, have say 5 to 10 years to really start thinking about, yeah, supercharging. Super as an example, or again, it's really, retirement is now somewhat on the horizon. You know, you can sort of see it. So doing a bit of forecasting and planning out, I think, is really important. Like, again, for this, this hypothetical person, it's, well, let's map out, you know, how long do you actually potentially need to work to have a comfortable retirement as well? That gives, I think, people a lot of comfort knowing what that time period is, because it might only be 60 or it might be 65 or, you know, it might be 70, but at a part-time job as well. So you're not going to get that burnout over that period of time too, potentially.
Yeah, love it. And just for those folks that are playing along at home, you can contribute money to super yourself as well. You don't need your employer to do it, but your employer is obliged to do it. Up to $27,500 a year as part of what we call a concessional contribution. And as you get closer to super, in my opinion, those things make more and more sense, assuming it does not conflict with an existing goal. So you can't put money into super, for example, and then just decide tomorrow to pull it out and buy a house. It's not the way it works. So if you do put that money in, you've got to be sure that it's going in the right direction. But if you are in that situation, it can be a wonderful way for a single or a couple to save for their retirement and save fast due to the benefits of tax, as Alex rightly pointed out. All right, mate, we've got two more questions, and then I'm going to get your key takeaway for the episode. I'm going to name this one playing with leverage, because it was a bit of a weird one. And I wasn't 100% sure where this was going. But should I leverage my existing shares to invest in other investments, i.e. ETFs or shares? Now I can only imagine, I actually don't know what they're talking about. I can imagine maybe taking out some sort of loan or something like this, which I don't know. How did you take this?
Yeah, so I'm going to take the question literally first, and then we'll talk more towards, yeah, potentially, you know, unlocking, say, equity in a property or something like that to potentially invest in shares. So maybe more of a gearing strategy or a debt recycling strategy possibly as well. So in terms of the question, you know, I've interpreted, can I basically use my existing share portfolio? So that's just say it's 200 grand or 500 grand worth of shares, to then basically leverage, so use that as security to borrow more money to then invest. Now, again, a mortgage broker is going to be the best person to ask, but I had a chat to the one we have in the office here, and practically, it's very hard to do. In theory, not really something that the banks basically do. So they'll use a property as security. It's one of the advantages of property, that banks are much more comfortable with it than shares. But yeah, you can't really, as far as I could, at least with, you know, a stock standard sort of retail bank, go in there and be like, hey, I've got $200,000 worth of shares, I want to use that as security for you to lend me more money. They're just not going to do it. So practically, this isn't really that possible. So now let's maybe switch over and be like, okay, let's just say, we are able to borrow some money to effectively invest. Maybe that's, again, drawing down some equity from a property or something like that, that we have a security for.
So you've got property, you have that property, and you've got a little bit of money in there sloshing around. You think, maybe I could do something with that.
Yeah, that's right. So let's say you've got 100 grand worth of what they call usable equity, and you don't want to buy another property in this example. So you pull that out to effectively go and invest in the share market, which would be considered a gearing strategy, is what they would basically call that.
Yeah.
So when you look to do that, I think the main, or two of the sort of the main things to look at, is firstly your risk tolerance, or what they call your risk profile. So how do you feel about, you know, potentially if you do invest that and it falls by 20% as an example, like, and again, this is a tricky thing to do, but you try to sort of put yourself in that hypothetical situation that, you know, are you going to panic and want to sell it, or, you know, you're going to be okay with it because you know that markets do move up and down in the short term. And what sort of helps guide that, I think, more is that investment time frame. So if I'm going to take this 100 grand and invest it, is that going to be for the next 10 years and I'm just leaving it because I'm not going to need access to it? Or is it a situation of, well, I only want to do it for a year and then I want it back? If it's the latter, that's probably not the way to go, right? Because, again, markets can go up and down. Let's just take the last 2 years, you know, 2022, shocking year for markets, 2023. Much better, right? So they move up and down and no one really knows what it's going to do on a year-on-year basis, but forecast it out long enough, so 10 plus years, historically speaking, it does generally always go up. So that's really important. And then the second thing I think you need to look at is your cash flow. So if you are going to go and borrow this money, you've got to pay interest on that, which because it's for investment purposes, would be tax deductible. So again, depending on how much money you make will depend on how much of a tax deduction you get. But effectively, you do have to pay this back, right, over a period of time. So
yeah, it's a loan.
That's right, it's a loan. So you've got to pay it back. So it's making sure that you can cover the cost of that, obviously, in the interim. You would probably get some, we'll just assume that, you know, there's some Aussie shares exposure in this example. So there would be some dividends potentially coming in, so some income that you would receive, which will help, obviously, with these repayments. But again, you've got to make sure that you've got enough buffers in place that if, you know, something, you know, minor or major happens, you're still going to be able to meet those repayments as well. And again, you're not going to have to sort of sell in a hurry or anything like that.
I love that because I think maybe the questioner playing with leverage in this question may have actually made a mistake, I'm guessing. I leverage my property to invest in other investments, e.g. shares? And I think that's the way, that's kind of like the non-literal way to interpret this question. And I think this is something that we've had a lot of conversations on the podcast lately is, you know, someone presents to you, Alex, they go, hey, mate, like I've got, you know, a $800,000 house, but my mortgage is only $400,000. Can I do anything with that extra $400 in there? I've still got 20, 30 years to invest. I want to be sensible. I don't want to just like go and, you know, put it all into some speculative stocks, but can I put it in ETFs? Can I invest it for the long term? And what you're saying is you can, but it just requires very careful strategy, knowing that it's got to be long-term focused. And to be honest, in my opinion, I've had some of the debates that I've had on X or Twitter lately is, some people don't always get this. In fact, a lot of people don't always get this right, whether it's the time frame, as you said, or even just practically what happens when the money hits my account? How do I document that with my accountant? What does the mortgage broker tell me to do? Like all of those things, get advice, get proper advice. It's something that we spoke about with Chris Bates, mortgage broker, recently. But get a financial advisor who's qualified to give you that advice. Just to make sure that you do understand the risks. Good one, mate. We've got one final question here. Which is from Latoni, the future retiree. So they say, cost for financial planning. And I thought this was a good one because we've spoken about this previously and I'm hoping you can riff on this for a bit. Cost for financial planning. Sounds like it's a setup and then off you go and good luck. Pretty, maybe it's a bit of a cynical take, but is there any follow-up meetings in years to come, especially if your circumstances change or is there any reduced new fees in this case or just another full fee setup again? Thanks for all of the information you have shared. Great podcast, says Latoni. And thank you, Tony, for this wonderful question because Alex and I did speak about this and how kind of the industry tends to operate, but also how Everest is a little bit different in this regard. And it actually is very appealing in my regard. So maybe, mate, take this however you want, but if you could frame this question is like, what's typical and then how do you guys do it? Maybe that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I'll talk about what's typical or traditionally what's been done in the financial advice industry and then, yeah, how we do it at Everest Wealth. Right. So, you know, again, if you want to seek some financial advice, you would meet with your financial advisor. You would effectively agree on what the scope of work is going to be in terms of how they're going to help you, what that process is, and then what they're going to charge. So generally, there will be a one-off cost at the start, which will effectively cover the initial advice piece and creating what they call the statement of advice, which is the financial plan. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they call it statement of advice. The public doesn't really know what that means, but that's the financial plan. Okay. So that gets created for you. And generally as part of that as well, we'll include implementation of that advice as well. So we wanted to move Superfund from A to B because we can save fees and we can, you know, the investment option there is more appropriate for whatever we're looking to do. That's the advice, and then the financial advisor would help you execute that as well. So there's a one-off cost for that. Mm-hmm. Typically in the industry, for when clients are seeking financial advice, they would generally then become what they call an ongoing client. So what that basically means is they'll pay an agreed upon ongoing fee to the financial advisor or the financial advice firm, and they will receive then ongoing assistance going forward as part of that. So that would typically involve normally at least one catch up a year. There may be multiple touch points throughout the year. Again, this would all be basically tabled in terms of what you get in what they call an ongoing service agreement. Okay. Now, where we do it a little bit different at Everest Wealth compared to, again, typically the industry, is we're a lot more flexible on that ongoing part. So when people come to see us, we give them the option. So effectively, if you would like some help or like some advice initially and then have that that executed and help set up with that, we charge a one-off cost for that. And then with us, you don't need to become an ongoing client past that point in time if you don't wish. Okay. You certainly can. We do have ongoing clients, but you know, it might be a case of, again, you just want some help reviewing your super fund or a contribution strategy to super, or looking to set up an investment outside super and you don't quite know how to do that. Again, it really depends on everyone's specific sort of situation with this, in that the ongoing help may be warranted sometimes, but sometimes it won't be as well. So it's a question I answer quite often, because when we go through clients, we go, yeah, these are basically the two options you have. This is the fork in the road. And the follow-up question I often get is, okay, if we don't go ongoing, how does it work from here? And the answer then, again, I'll just speak to Everest Wealth's sort of process is it largely depends, okay? So it may be a situation where we've helped you out, Owen. You know, we did a lot of work for you, you know, for yourself and Sarah, put a, you know, a lot of advice in place, helped, you know, implemented it. But then largely after that, it was just you, say, shoveling money into an investment or, you know, shoveling money to pay down debt or, again, whatever that sort of is. 2 years later, your situation's changed. You guys are going to have a kid now, as an example. I'm picking on you. so obviously, you know, things are going to change a little bit. We're going to go down to 1.5 incomes. You know, we need to maybe think about some life insurance now, as an example. Again, whatever that sort of is. You would come back to us in this example because you're not ongoing, and we would go, okay, great. Oh, and this is the scope of work we now need to do. And it may not be as big as it was before, but effectively this is now the, you know, the one-off fee that we would charge to now, again, provide this additional advice and provide any sort of additional implementation. So to Latoni, the future retiree's point, it can be a reduced cost, that re-engagement. Often with us, it is typically, because again, we've kind of already done the bulk of the work a couple of years before. But again, it really just depends. You know, you might come to me in this example and you've now won lotto. So it's just a completely different situation as an example. So we almost have to start again. I guess it's important to, you would discuss that with the financial advisor. So we always discuss that, you know, when you come to see us, in terms of this is the scope of work, this is what we would charge, this is what you're getting for that, this is the process. Are you happy with that? Yes or no?
Yeah, cool. I like it. I really do like that. So basically, there's two options here. It's like a formalized ongoing agreement, or if you do the once off, then you can always just go back to the advisor again. In your instance, which is very common. Are you able, just before I riff on that the two different pathways, can you maybe just give us, and listeners, I know you've said it before, but just context of like, what is the ballpark range of fees that typically someone might pay if they just want the once off, say through Everest Wealth?
Yeah, so through Everest Wealth, our minimum fee for once off, which would include the advice and the implementation, I believe is a smidge under $4,000 is what we would charge for that.
Which is pretty compelling, particularly if you can pay for some of the advice you may receive through Super.
Yes, that's correct. And I guess another thing, if I can add, this is probably getting a little bit more technical, but like what we would do as well, depending on whether the client wants to become ongoing or not, is when you come to see a financial advisor, you know, the products which we may or may not use, like, you know, a lot of them the public have access to, like everyone's got access to Perla as an example, and we do use Perla from time to time depending on the client situation. But we also have access to an additional set of products which the public don't have access to. Now, a financial advisor is always going to act in your best interest in terms of which product they effectively go for. But some of the and some of the products which we have access to are actually, you know, very cheap, and very competitive, and again have a whole list of investment options and what have you. But they may require a financial advisor to sit on that product, as an example. So if the client is thinking, yep, I'm going to need ongoing help going forward, I value that, then that may be an avenue that we do sort of explore as well as, I guess, the standard products. Whereas if it's someone's situation where they're really just going to need the one-off advice now in the implementation, then go and do their own thing for a couple of years. Like I said, we're just shoveling money into an investment or something like that. And the amount of money obviously comes into that too. Then we may look to use a more, a product which effectively the public has more access to, because again, you don't want to be ringing me up for a password, and I don't want you ringing me up for a password, to be honest, if you're not an ongoing client, because that admin side also factors into when we are choosing which effectively product which we may or may not use based on the strategy that we're going to implement, and based on obviously the ultimate goal that we're trying to achieve here too.
Yeah, I love it. That is really interesting. So for folks that don't know what Alex kind of, I just might do an abridged version just quickly. Yep. So financial advisors can use different software and different tools and different investments, different insurance, they have a whole different range of things that maybe you and I listening to this, we cannot get. But some of those things are platforms, what we call platforms in the industry, which might be common names, NetWealth Hub, and there are others. But that is kind of like a suite of tools that are often only available to financial advisors. And oftentimes you'll see that in your statement of advice if you do ongoing, because it makes the administration of everyone's situations easier. Fingers crossed if it all works out, but it normally does. So that is really interesting. And that's typical of what you might see in an ongoing financial advice relationship. The other thing I might call out is I often see, Alex, I know you deal with people that are like in their 20s, 30s, 40s, and even into their 50s. But what I find with typically older clients as they go towards retirement, 50s, 60s, 70s, is they do go with advisors and they do select the option that they do want ongoing help. And they do have bigger balances, so they are prepared to pay the extra amount in fees, which is completely fine. It's just that it does entitle some people to a different experience if they want that. So just know what you're getting. Just know that there are two options. Just know that some advisors like Everest Wealth will offer you both. Some will only offer one. It's up to you as the individual at the end of the day to ask the right questions of your financial advisor and make sure you're comfortable on an ongoing basis. So final question, which is the one that I always ask you to give to our listeners every episode. Because we cover a lot of ground, there's a lot of different concepts, a lot of different terms, a lot of different components of what we talk about in these Q&As. But if someone's got 2 minutes listening to this right now, they're driving in their Hyundai, they just about got to work, they've just heard us serenade them with all this financial wisdom, what is the action point that you would want to leave them with today? What's something that they could do?
Yeah, they're probably absolutely sick of my voice by now, so I apologize for that. I was having a good thing. So we are recording this on the 23rd of February, 2024. Mm-hmm. So, we're starting to get into the year now. You know, the wheels are starting to turn, these sorts of things. Social events are starting to happen. Everyone's largely back at work now. School started, all those sorts of things. So yep. I thought it would be good just to sort of call out before, before we know it, we're sort of, in June or July or anything like that, you may have made, a few New Year's resolutions at the start of this year or some things that you wanted to sort of tick off. So what I'm sort of calling out here is just checking in with yourself in terms of, what that was, and basically, have you made any progress with that? And I think the aim is to try to make some progress with that in some shape or form by the end of March. So give yourself into the end of sort of Q1, whether that's, you were going to engage a professional this year for some reason, you were going to review your budget, you were going to get your will done. That's something we hear quite often. Or if it's more of a health goal. So you were going to, you wanted to hit a certain exercise goal as an example, just try to get something in place that you're moving towards whatever that goal is before the end of March, because a lot of the time that initial getting over that inertia is the hardest part.
Yep, I like that. So just check in with yourself. Check in with your goals that you set, the former version of yourself set a couple of months ago. Where are you at? How are you tracking with them? And this comes back to the very beginning of the episode where we talked about budgeting. Just be kind to yourself. Everyone knows that the average New Year's resolution doesn't make it till February. So be kind to yourself. If you haven't got it, keep those wheels moving. Keep the progress. It's okay if some of those things haven't worked out. I can tell you, for one, like, I'm trying to eat healthier, exercise, put away my phone an hour before bed, do all those sorts of things. It doesn't always work. Had Macca's yesterday. Let's be honest.
It's delicious.
It is delicious. Don't go and eat Macca's. We probably planted that seed in your head now. But the reality is, just check in with yourself. So I think that's wonderful, wonderful advice. For anyone that is watching, you can head to the link in your show notes or head straight to Everest Wealth. They're also available on all the socials. Check them out. Great team over at Everest Wealth. For anyone that contributes to our next Q&A, here's a special. For anyone, actually, we'll do it for this episode as well. If you did write in any of these questions, please get in contact with us at RASC. If you were any of these people playing with leverage, financial planning, Latoni, if you were the teen investor, the hippo, birdie, anyone, mum's in her 50s with 10K in super, get in contact with us, and you can, at your choosing, pick any free course that's available, any course that's available on RASC, whether it's free or premium. We've got $500 courses on there. You can have it for free. Just write into us and say, hey, I was the one that asked that question. And if you ask the question in the next episode, exactly the same thing. We'll give you a free course, no matter even if it's our most premium or if you want to become part of our membership, whatever. Just write into us and you'll get some free stuff, because we want to say thanks for sending in such great questions. Alex, this was heaps of fun, mate. I'm looking forward to doing the next one. Thanks for joining me.
Sounds good, mate. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast. We hope you learned something new and were able to take one thing away from this episode.
If you're keen to learn more, head on over to RASC Education and take one of our free money and investing courses. You could even become a RASC Core member for less than your Netflix subscription each month. And don't forget to subscribe for new episodes in your inbox every week.
Plus, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love you to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify and send any questions our way via the link in the description. And before we go on, did this podcast contain personal financial advice just for me?
Absolutely not, Kate. Our podcast actually contains general financial information only. What that means is the information does not take into account your financial needs, goals, objectives, or even your situation. So because of that, it's important that you consider if the information is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on it.
If that all sounds a bit confusing or you're still working out what your needs are, it's a great idea to consult a licensed and trusted financial planner. And don't forget to do your own research.
InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10, and to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that RASC could help you in 2024. As many of you know, RASC has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies, which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at RASC, which is the launch of our RASC Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have 3 strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside RaskCore. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called RaskCore. Number three, our first ever partnership with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 Rask community members have begun the Rask plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni, and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by Rask, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RaskCore, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this, this is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nivexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All Rask users get 20% off an annual plan with Nivexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nivexa's software, and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nivexa, but they do create some great tools which the Rask community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number 9, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the Rask YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the Rask network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the Rask Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we are on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. Rask Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the Rask Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000 and hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support Rask and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the Rask Network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.